This is a People First Radio podcast.
Guy Falicella spent 30 years in the repeated cycles of gangs, addiction, treatment, and jail. For nearly two decades of that time, he lived within a two-block radius on Vancouver's downtown east side. Today, he lives with his wife and three young children, and has over a decade of recovery and sobriety under his belt. Falicella shares his story as a public speaker, advocating for trauma therapy, harm reduction, and swifter access to treatment. He was in Nanaimo to speak as part of a community dialogue on the toxic drug crisis. It took place May 28th at Nanaimo's Port Theater. I caught up with Falicella in the lobby ahead of his talk.
My name's Guy Falicella, and I'm a harm reduction recovery expert.
And you're the keynote speaker at today's event. All of these people are here in large part to see you. Can you tell me a bit about the message you're going to be sharing today?
Well, I'm just going to, you know, share my personal story and journey through, you know, numerous challenges that I dealt with throughout life, obviously, being homeless for two decades in the downtown east side, in and out of the criminal justice system. The challenge with accessing services throughout my life, inspire others that no matter how far, you know, we fall down, as long as there's supportive people around us, that, you know, people do recover and move on with their lives.
Are there any big pieces of what you feel are misinformation that are out there or that are maybe especially prominent recently that you'd like to address?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of misinformation. I think with, you know, people who use drugs or people who struggle with addiction or homelessness, there's so many complex challenges and factors that are involved. Obviously, you know, I've never met a substance user or a person who struggles with addiction. Sorry, I shouldn't say substance user, but I've never met a person who hasn't struggled with addiction that doesn't struggle with trauma. And it usually has impacted them from a very early age, of childhood trauma or intergenerational trauma. And that is just really a heavy load for people to carry. And so then on top of that, being homeless and struggling with, you know, unaddressed societal issues, you know, you start to understand why people gravitate to using substances to cope.
And so when a community or at the provincial or federal level, a government tries to address an issue like homelessness, what does taking that maybe trauma into account, what does that mean? What does that look like? How should that inform the solutions?
Well, I think you definitely have to have trauma-informed practices for sure, but also people need access to services as well, like, you know, counseling and therapy and trauma therapy, which isn't covered under MSP. And so for people who can't afford it, they can't access it. You know, nobody should have to choose over whether they're going to eat or go to therapy, unfortunately. And so, you know, we really have to look at the systems of care that are in place and really try to look at, hey, how do we support this person who is struggling in a way to help them move forward?
Was there a big, maybe a moment or a thing that happened or an action that someone, either yourself or someone else, took during your journey that you feel like really made a difference that you'd like to see replicated more?
Yeah, well, I mean, I always speak to the context of the supervised consumption site in the downtown east side of Vancouver, which had, you know, multiple layers of programming there. You know, it has the injection site on the bottom floor, it had a detox on the second floor, and it had a transitional housing on the third floor. And so in the sense of going into that facility and building a relationship with the nurses and staff that were there, and I started to open up about my story, and obviously, you know, many a times I was in both lines, one to access detox to get off drugs and then one to go use drugs safely. But the connections that were built there were astronomically huge in and instrumental in me finding recovery. And it was that facility that gave me bus tickets and cab vouchers to treatment facilities, and they were the ones advocating for me. And so, you know, February 18th, 2013 was the last overdose that I experienced there. And when I had woken up, the nurse was, you know, visibly emotional. And, you know, I asked her, why is she crying? And she said, because I care. And I just burst into tears, and I told her that, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. I'd been trying, you know, I was good at getting sober. I was never really good at staying sober, but I was always trying. And I think in our society, we have a lot of people trying, but just not getting the results that they're looking for. But we need to really look that people wake up every day and want to move forward. It's just easily said, but very hard to do. And so that nurse really got me back up into the detox. And, you know, away I went to treatment. And today I have over 11 years of sobriety. So, you know, that facility was instrumental in helping me find recovery.
With how the toxic drug supply has evolved over the last few years, continues to evolve, what do you think people need to know about that aspect of things as we try and implement solutions?
It's definitely so volatile, obviously, with xylazine and other benzos that are attacking into the supply now. It's just really become such a toxic supply. It's so unpredictable. And sadly, people are using that. And so, you know, you have to look at ways that can remove people as much as possible from that toxic drug supply, you know, with access to safer substances. And if you know, you need more than one option, you need a bunch of options that people can access. But the challenge is that people need to access it. I think we have a lot of the right things in place, you know, with safer supply and access to treatment. It's just, we just don't have enough of them.
And you talked about, you know, kind of being in the one line to access kind of detox, and then the other line to access, you know, being able to use substances still. Do you feel like you've talked in the past as well about the idea that we need both recovery and treatment options for people and harm reduction options? Do you find there's kind of a one or the other simplified discourse out there?
Oh, 100%. It's to the bane of my existence. I mean, constantly I'm... You can't have one over the other, and I don't support harm reduction over recovery, and I don't support recovery over harm reduction. I support people and where they're at. And, you know, harm reduction, we need really all the tools in our society. So we need access to supervised consumption sites, access to safer substances, access to detox, access to getting into treatment and recovery, and then also we need access to housing. So we really have to have all the tools in place on a full spectrum of care. Otherwise, you just don't walk into a front door of a recovery society and walk out the back door and your life gets better. It takes numerous attempts, numerous. Sometimes it takes years, decades even. And when people have a chronic relapsing condition and stay sober for 3-4 months and go back to that volatile supply, unfortunately, it's there to ambush them. And sadly, a lot of people die because of it.
Is there a message you'd like to share with people in Nanaimo around Vancouver Island who aren't at today's event?
Yeah, just, hey, I know it's challenging and, you know, it's hard to poverty, homelessness, substance use. It isn't pretty. It's not supposed to be pretty. It's a sad situation for a lot of people. But behind every individual out there is a story. And it's a story of a human being that has a mom, has a dad, has a family, and they're struggling. And so, you know, to look at it through the lens of, like, if we don't give people better options, then we can't really expect people to move forward. We have to really kind of do things, and that's where we need all the tools, harm reduction and recovery services. And, you know, I've been in your town now since this morning. It's very beautiful. I like small town feels. You know, we're walking up in the downtown area here, talking to people, you know, seeing people, you know, and obviously I know this community is impacted by the toxic drug supply. And I hope that we can take the emotions out of it and really look at the people and how we can best support them with all pathways.
Guy, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
Guy Felicella speaking with me in the lobby of Nanaimo's Port Theater ahead of a community dialogue on the toxic drug crisis, Tuesday, May 28th. I spoke with a number of people around the lobby ahead of the event. Here are some moments from those conversations. Is there a message you want people who weren't at today's event to know?
Oh yeah, just don't judge a book by its cover. You know, you never know what you're gonna find. Get to know the person, you know, crack the shell before you judge the nut.
This is a big issue. There is a whole lot to it. Is there anything, maybe one message you'd encourage people to focus on that is especially relevant, you think, in the present moment?
I think I hope it's everybody recognizing that they're being affected by this toxic drug crisis, whether they like it or not, and not, you know, coming together with creative reasonings and solutions and supporting those who are most vulnerable and marginalized will just continue to hurt all of us collectively anyways. And so I think the time of division and political conversation should be left out of a health crisis, and we really should be centering this toxic drug crisis with the attention and the funding and the resources and the supports and the advocacy that it truly needs.
I'm going to be sharing a story about a friend and former coworker who died of an overdose, and I'm going to share her story as much as I can, and tell folks how sharing her story is my attempt to reduce the stigma, to humanize somebody that was quite popular and well known in our downtown, somebody who by all accounts from the outside lived a normal life and held down a job and had a house and everything, but still struggled, and unfortunately her demons and self-medicating got the better of her.
How would you like to be introduced to people listening on the radio?
Shane.
And what's brought you out today?
The stigma against people that use drugs.
Can you tell me a little bit about what that stigma can look like in practice?
It looks like people not caring, people beating people up, the community, beating the homeless up, or just derogatory remarks, or just exactly how people look at people. They're like, you could tell so many words with just their eyes.
What are you hoping to, what kind of conversations are you hoping to have today as we were kind of in the lobby before things get started? What kind of message are you hoping to share with people?
That we need to stop judging people and looking at people like they're different, and start having a little bit of humanity and some compassion, because lots of people are dying, and if everybody got together, it'd make something.
Do you think there's one maybe concrete action or simple thing that people listening could do to make a difference?
Open up, like, more places people can use, or like a drop-in center, so people can have a sense of belonging and give them work.
And you were mentioning to me that you've just been in treatment recently. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
I went to Namgis and Alert Bay for 6 weeks to better myself and get clean, as well as Cedars for 6 weeks. That's in Cobble Hill. And I'm still clean, but I've only been out 5 days, so I'm still doing good, though.
Is there anything about that experience that you'd, I don't know, that you'd want to share with people who don't know anything about what treatment is like?
The treatment center is like a place you can go get your spirit, your soul, your whole humanity back, and learn to deal with some of the issues that are people dealing with. That's why they do drugs. So you go to treatment and it helps you clear everything up, almost to a point where you don't have to use drugs, you could use other tools.
And is there anything you'd want to mention to people in Nanaimo who don't make it to today's event?
I just wish that the community as a whole could start treating people with care and compassion. That's all I want.
Shane, thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah, no problem.
Panelists and guests speaking with me ahead of a May 28th community dialogue on the toxic drug crisis at Nanaimo's Port Theatre. After guest speakers Beverly Plains from the Nanaimo Area Network of Drug Users and Guy Felicella, who we heard from earlier, a 7-member panel shared some of their experiences. One of the speakers was Wanda LeBlanc with advocacy group Moms Stop the Harm.
I know that many of you have already heard these statistics, but I want to reiterate. Unregulated drug toxicity is the leading cause of death in British Columbia for persons aged 10 to 59, accounting for more deaths than homicides, suicides, accidents, and natural disease combined. The lives of more than 14,000 British Columbians have been lost due to unregulated drugs since the public health emergency was first declared in April of 2016. That's almost three times the number of COVID deaths in BC during the pandemic. These deaths are preventable. I spent 35 years working with children and families in various regions in the province. I've seen more than my share of suffering, but I've never seen anything like this. I'm an advocate, but most importantly, I'm the mother of an adult son who is actively using opioids. My son was a bright, active, happy boy as a toddler. He struggled when he began school, and in second grade was diagnosed with ADHD. He experienced depression and anxiety throughout his young life. We as a family did everything we could to support him. His father and I were both educated in child and youth care and strongly connected to resources in the field. We advocated for him on an ongoing basis throughout his life. As an adolescent, my son started experimenting with substances. He says they made him feel normal. He used for 3 years and became actively suicidal. He realized he was not coping without substances and agreed to go to treatment. He was in recovery for an extended period of time. In his early 20s, he met and married the love of his life, and they had two beautiful children. He was a good dad, had a full-time job, a close family, and a solid circle of friends. 4 years ago, after his 12-year marriage ended, he moved into a basement suite alone. He was grieving the loss of his marriage and the lack of time with his children. His job was put on hold due to COVID, and he became very depressed. He began using substances once again. Within a short time, he attempted suicide by fentanyl twice and was admitted to psychiatric emergency unit at NRGH. There was no psychiatrist available to assess him, so he walked twice. To make a long story short, that was the beginning of an unbearable trauma that has affected my son and our family for the last 4 years. Excuse me. He left the hospital while medicated, in withdrawal, and in psychosis. He lost contact with reality. I called police in sheer fear for his life. He got into a scuffle and assaulted a police officer. He came very close to being shot. He was taken down, arrested, and put in jail. He was transferred to Wilkinson Prison for many months to await sentencing. Since it was during COVID, no one could visit him. He detoxed alone in solitary confinement in what the inmates call a taco, which is basically a straitjacket. He was naked, alone, and afraid, stripped of any dignity he had. When things opened up and I could visit my son, I did. I saw a huge change in him. The sensitive, caring man I knew had to get tough to survive in prison. There were no programs, no supports, other than a psychiatrist who only prescribed medications and an addictions counselor who was available about once a month. He tried to navigate the Lord of the Flies mentality in prison and was beaten up badly, ridiculed by guards, and his self-esteem plummeted. Since that time, my son has been in and out of recovery, in and out of the criminal court system, on and off the streets, and the deterioration is terrifying. He has not seen his children in 3 years, and all I can do is hold them close and tell them that Daddy is ill. I can't make them any promises that they will see him again. My son needed mental health support and kindness, not imprisonment. At any point in that first year, if he had had the support he needed, I believe he would have had a chance to thrive again. I worry about my son every day. I advocate for substance users and the unhoused. I attend one group and facilitate another. I do counseling and reach out to friends and family for support. I use all of the tools I've learned over the years to survive this nightmare. Yet every day I feel the anticipatory grief of the loss of my son. My heart is heavy for all of the sons, daughters, mothers, fathers, and extended family and friends out there that are suffering this endless trauma. The addict you see on the street is loved by someone. They are lost and hurting. No one starts with choosing a life of being cold, hungry, stigmatized, and desperate. There are catalysts to using substances. We can't judge others' experiences or how they react unless we've walked in their shoes. Making a difference means caring. It means hearing from the population that is most affected by this crisis. The person struggling, the families, and their loved ones. I ask that you open your heart, put aside your fear, and become part of the solution to the suffering in our community. This crisis is real and growing. Turning your back or blaming the victims will not make it go away. Thank you for hearing my words.
Wanda LeBlanc of Moms Stop the Harm speaking at a community dialogue on the toxic drug crisis at Nanaimo's Port Theater, May 28th. Before the event, I had the chance to speak with LeBlanc about some of the resources available to people with loved ones currently using substances. I know you're on the panel, you're going to be speaking shortly, but here in the lobby, there's a lot of folks kind of mingling around. What kind of conversations are you having?
Just a lot of interest. People, I think, you know, they don't get an opportunity to learn a lot about substance use and some of the community services, and I think that people are really interested in hearing more. And that warms my heart because I think there's a great need in Nanaimo.
And I know one of the things you're doing is sharing some resources that exist for folks who maybe someone in their family is using substances. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, actually it's family, friend, neighbor, anyone who has a loved one who is using substances and they feel they need support, they're more than welcome to come. Everyone in the group, including the facilitator, has a loved one who's using substances, so they have a good understanding of what that's like. And it's just an opportunity to talk about that and to find out what resources are in the community, what books to read, those kinds of things.
And what's the name of that program? How can people find out more information?
Yeah, so that program's called Holding Hope. We have another program called Healing Hearts. And Healing Hearts is for people who have lost a loved one to substance use. Same sort of format, but it meets once a month. And then we also have the Peer Navigator program. We actually have one person, her name is Gretchen, and she will go out and advocate for people. She will meet them in their homes. She will take people to the hospital and advocate for them there. So, and that program's just starting up. But all three of those programs are with Moms Stop the Harm.
Is there a message you maybe want to pass to anyone who didn't make it out to today's event?
Yeah, anyone can contact us. We have a website, momstoptheharmcanada.org. They can contact me if they're interested in joining a group. It's holdinghope1@gmail.com.
Wanda LeBlanc with Moms Stop the Harm, speaking with me at Nanaimo's Port Theater, Tuesday, May 28th, ahead of a community dialogue on the toxic drug crisis.
People First Radio, People First Media, and People First Stories are community media projects of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society and are produced in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed do not necessarily represent the views of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society or its broadcast, podcast, and social media partners.